The demon's eyes twist in its skull, bones pushing against the thin, sickly membrane that a moment before you would have described as its skin. It's evolving, or it's trying to. It screams, the scream of a child as you stab the jagged end of the crystal into the base of its spine, its seven limbs tensing as one, great teeth pulling too wide as, all at once, its monstrous body shines with an alien light and is pulled into the depths of its new prison. The crystal does not glow so much as it pulses, erratic and angry in your hand. It burns against your fingers as you hold it up, the heat clawing, and the thin shell of the gem bristling against your skin. It is whispering something. Welcome to Parallel Lives, your resource for atypical analog role-playing. Truly, a maleficent force. You just wish you had managed to capture it before it had managed to fill this episode with a bit of unfortunate background noise. Apologies, listeners.
My cause. I will travel across the land, searching far and wide.
Hello again, today. I am your host again, Bram. That's me. Hello again, hello. And I am joined again by Raven, who you know, and Matt, who you probably don't know.
Hi.
Hello.
Today we are looking at Rookvale, another game by Avery McDonald of Buried Without Ceremony. For once today, after like, I don't know what episode number this is going to be, like episode 6? Something like that? After like a million episodes, because that's how many numbers come before the number 6, we are dealing with a game mostly based around combat and based around having as many dice as humanly possible. In fact, we didn't have enough dice, we had to improvise. And I think if we'd gone further into what the game wants us to do, we would have been having a dice shortage that you haven't seen before since the dice shortage of 1872.
I remember that.
Yeah. The book says to have roughly 20 D6s per player.
Yeah.
That was probably an underestimate. Like, we were playing with four people and had about 100 D6s, and we pretty firmly ran out mid-game.
Do you think we had that many?
Yeah. I mean,
maybe.
Maybe we had more like 80, but I wouldn't guess that we had a lot fewer than that.
I certainly didn't come to the table with 20 D6s, but I know Shannon had a whole bunch and you all had some.
Yeah.
So this game is, A, free if you're interested in it, so don't worry about that. Your wallets are safe from us today. B, described by the creator as Grimdark Pokemon. Whether or not that's accurate, I think could be debated. I have not played Pokemon very much. But it is a game based around, very generally speaking, going around fighting demons and then punching them in the face until you can capture them in your Pokeball, and then using them to punch more demons with, which seems more or less like Pokemon to me.
I think that it's a pretty good way to describe the game. I also think that we didn't do enough of that.
I agree.
So, I mean, I don't know when it's appropriate to start talking about this, but Rookvale is a representative of a kind of subgenre of indie role-playing games that are basically modifications of existing, like, more AAA or AA role-playing systems. So Rookvale was written by
Buried Without Ceremony,
who we've played several of their other games. However, it is built almost entirely on top of Anima Prime, which is a system that I'd heard of previously, but have no experience with. And I think prior to playing the game, just reading the book, it didn't quite feel like this. Like, I've certainly read some fan-made and indie games like this that feel really heavily derivative of something else, but Rookvale really feels like it was grafted onto the Anima rule set in some ways that, in my opinion, don't fuse very cohesively. Like, the game's intended to have a really strong emphasis on capturing demons and using them to fight, but the mechanics around that are a little wonky, and as we kind of surprisingly discovered through play, there were ways to be very successful without paying attention to those set of mechanics at all. Matt found a exploit that I was very impressed with, but which made him tremendously more effective than the one demon that the party managed to capture. And I think that maybe a game that was a little more polished might have not included that exploit.
So by the exploit, you mean the move where he could tie someone up and give them minus one defense, right?
Yes, and that stacked with something else that it shouldn't have stacked with. He ended up doing something ridiculous like 20 damage in one turn, and this was a game that generally players are doing less than 2 or 3 damage around. So,
well,
it was pretty tremendous.
It was partially lowering the defense by one, which is a huge thing, at least at first. It's also because I had a lot of charge dice and I was using my other skill, which just let me do more damage.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it stacked pretty well, but I don't think that it was too ridiculous. Like, not having a demon, you were saying, it's like, mm-hmm. we could succeed without doing that at first. The game didn't go on long enough to see if that would still hold true, which I don't think it would, which
mm-hmm.
is why I feel like we just didn't explore capturing and using the demons enough. I think we should have done more of that.
Yeah, so this was a system with a DM, which I don't know that we've mentioned. A lot of role-playing systems have a method in which the person who is running the game can look at an encounter and say, this has this difficulty rating, my players can take roughly this level of challenge, and so they will or will not survive this encounter. Rookvale, it's a rather short book, but a large portion of its rules are about how the game master puts new monsters into play, and like where they put them, and how all of that works. But, so I was game master. I think I followed all the rules. However, we ended up running 4 or 5 encounters, and of the first 4, I think only one of them was a challenge, and then the 5th one was a really brutal total party kill, where I had, I think, followed all of the rules, and I didn't feel like the players were missing any of the mechanics too poorly, but then just all of a sudden the demons were at a such higher power level that it led to kind of a weird end of the session where just suddenly everyone was dead.
Note, listeners, filling out like your bingo cards at home for Parallel Lives. This is the first total party kill of the podcast, so if anyone gets your prize from that, call in. We'll send you nothing, but with love.
I'll send you congratulations.
I'll fax you a picture of some cookies that I made.
We'll 3D print you a heart.
And then we'll keep it. We're not going to send it to you.
Yeah, no, it's true. But no, sorry. To get back to what I meant to say is, I don't know. I did not read the GM section of the mm-hmm. notes. And I have not read Anna Prime, so I can't speak to that either. But I don't feel that the so-called exploit you were talking about before mm-hmm. felt particularly unfair. It just happened to be the case we were dealing with an enemy that had a lot of health and low defense. So when we could do a thing that further lowered the defense, we were just taking advantage of a creature's already explicit weakness and just helping it along. And the reason that we later got totally smashed by the enemies at the end was because instead of having 2 defense, like the dead king that we were fighting, they had like 5 or 6 defense, which meant that we could almost not hurt them at all. And like Matt was saying, I think that this was because we hadn't captured enough Pokemon yet and we hadn't gotten our gym badges. The way the game works in terms of your character structure is that there's really no way for your characters to level up particularly. There's no experience system. There's no real way that you're going to get more equipment, usually.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of basic steps in character creation we'll probably get to in a second. And then you're good to go, and you've got some various traits you can use to help soup yourself up for various encounters. And you can gain or lose those, and I guess that's kind of a way to level up. But usually it's a lateral move.
It felt kind of cyclical, where players could start an encounter in a better or worse state, but there was definitely a maximum state that they could start an encounter with. So I agree that maybe we were seeing a really harsh edge case where you guys hadn't picked up enough mons, and suddenly it caught up with you all at once. But I think that 5 encounters is quite a bit, actually. And I mean, 5 combat encounters. We did a lot of combat that session. If you guys had been pretty strongly at risk at some point early in the game, you would have noticed that maybe you needed to invest more in Mons, and then, I don't know, I think that the TPK kind of snuck up on all of us.
Well, I think part of the problem with that is that after a combat, you were rolling some dice and deciding where more demons popped up or which demons got stronger, and I think the randomness of that kind of worked against us, and it's like, okay, this demon's gonna get stronger. After the next combat, okay, this one demon, it's gonna get stronger again, and at that point, it was too much for us to handle.
Yeah.
But if you didn't use the system of rolling dice for that, like if the GM was working a lot harder and making the decisions about, like, all right, which demons are going to get stronger, what are the demons doing over here? I'm not going to tell the players because they weren't there, and this is what they've been doing, and this is how they're getting stronger. It might be easier for the players to run around and combat everything. On the other hand, the lack of character development isn't exactly true. Your character itself doesn't get stronger, but the demons that you capture, those can get stronger. They can evolve when you have them. And so it's way more important than I thought to capture demons and use them and make them better. Because if we all had a bunch of strong demons at that point, I don't think it would have been a total party kill. I think it would have been a really challenging encounter, but we would have prevailed. Maybe only one or two casualties instead of four.
Yeah, no, in retrospect, actually, I'm feeling the same kind of thing, where, like, so through our four or five encounters, we ended up capturing, I think, two?
One.
Okay, we ended up capturing only one. We ended up capturing the Storm Spirits or something like that.
Didn't do much. At first.
They did some witching. Lots of witching.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. So we ended up capturing one Pokemon between us, partially because we killed them too quickly, partially because we didn't think it was as big of a deal to capture things. Like, one item that I had, my character, was the Mirror Sword. And the Mirror Sword is pretty cool because if you kill a Pokemon with it, then you get their power. And is that an item taken directly from Pokemon games? Can you do that?
No.
No? Okay. So, in the first encounter, we met some Unwolves, and we might have been able to capture them, but I was like, nah, I'll just try and murder them with my Mirror Sword. So I did, and I murdered the Unwolves, and that gave me some of the Unwolf power into my sword, and that was pretty cool, but it might have been more helpful to us if we'd captured the Unwolves, because we could have evolved them into, like, less wolves? I don't know what they'd become next. But
a lot of them have bridging evolutionary paths. So right. You probably memorize all the monsters.
Clearly from Unwolf, it goes to Urwolf, and then Overwolf, obviously.
Okay, that makes sense. Wolves.
I think it may have actually gone to Urwolf. That sounds right.
Okay.
Urwolf.
I know that I mentioned in the Ryotama cast episodes ago now.
Many episodes ago, the distant past.
In the distant past, I spoke about Ryotama, and I said something to the effect that it was a system that made it very difficult for a person who's game mastering to prep ahead of time because of the system in place for, like, randomizing which new demons get put in and, like, where and when. Rookvale structured in a way that makes it pretty much impossible to prepare encounters. Certainly, I came to the session with some encounters in mind, and we did some of them, and we didn't do some of them because the board changed in ways that made some of the encounters that I was planning not possible anymore. But overall, it's another system that requires a lot of improvisation by the game master, and I feel that personally it can be really difficult to tell an interesting story and run a fun combat encounter at the same time. And that's doubly so if you're running a system like Rookvale that is so combat-centric, where your story kind of has to revolve around what happens in the combat section of the game. And there's a set of mechanics in Rookvale for, like, explicitly character development, where we get, like, character scenes. But I felt like the players were never given an opportunity to really be attached to their characters enough that those were effective, at least for us.
Yeah, in our case, that was how it went. So the structure of Rookvale is such that you have a battle where you all come together and you fight some dudes, or some Pokemon in this case, and
we're just exclusively calling them Pokemon now.
I mean, you could also fight humans.
Described as Pokemon, why wouldn't we call it that?
Yeah, it says Pokemon in the pamphlet.
Yeah. Maybe I should have just run it as Pokemon. I think maybe we would have had more fun.
I never played a Pokemon game in my life.
I would have a more positive opinion of Rookvale had I just run it. I was like, oh, you found six wild Pikachu. They're eating the village.
Well,
good luck with that.
For those of you listening, stay tuned as we slowly develop a Pokeville.
Pokeville. Don't even bring that up, Bram. I'm going to actually run it. You're going to show up 1 week, and I'm going to have pretended to prep something else, but actually we're just playing Pokeville. Shannon would be so happy.
She would be happy. So, what I was saying, though, was you have a battle, you come together, you fight some Mons, maybe you capture, maybe you don't. Then, after that, each player gets to have one individual scene, or one scene with other characters, whatever the case, where you get to do a little bit of character building, and you can use that to either, like, refill your dice pools, or
Heal
your Pokemon, or to mark off, sort of similar to Ribbon Drive, one of your traits. And the traits, again, are things you write out that make your character who they are. So, like, my character was kind of a weirdo who talked to shadows because she spent a lot of time in the dark. Maybe that makes less sense. There's less shadows in the dark. No. And so, like, if I had a scene where she was doing that, it was in character, and maybe other people got weirded out by it or something, then I could proc that, and then later, during the actual battle, if I did something that involved me using that trait somehow, and it's a weird trait, so maybe it's a bad example, then I could use that and say, use that to re-roll some dice. And in this way, it's encouraging you to try and roleplay between the battles, but for us, at least, it felt a bit abbreviated.
I thought that it was a really good way to get people that aren't used to role-playing into being the character and acting like them and just portraying that character, because it gave direct statistical benefits to doing so, which can be good or bad for a game system, I think.
I think that part of the reason that the players had trouble really getting connected to their characters and, like, playing little scenes with them is that Rookvale makes it kind of very difficult to establish a coherent tone and setting, because there are a lot of ideas presented in the Rookvale book, like places with names, and it starts with, I think, a 2-page introduction on the intended tone. But and I want to talk about some of those things individually, especially the tone. Let's not forget.
We will definitely explore Bookvale.
I think that a lot of things in the book are brought up and then not discussed at all, where Olivia S. almost played with us, and I spoke to Olivia after the session, and she said that it felt like reading the book, every other page was missing, where the author would introduce a subject. So, like, for example, in Rookvale, there are six genders, and individuals in Rookvale can fluidly change what gender role they fill in their society, and different regions have different prejudices against different genders. However, nowhere in the book are we given any information on what the genders are like, or what the prejudices are, or what roles specifically the genders fill in their society. So it's like an interesting idea that as a game master, I came to the table with some ideas on what I wanted to do with this set of mechanics, but because they weren't, like, canon, they weren't in the book, the players have all also come to the table with different ideas on how these mechanics, how all of the Rookvale mechanics work. Like, we all read it slightly differently, and I felt like we had some problems that were similar to The Quiet Year, where we all interpreted the setting slightly differently, and it made it so that I felt like our characters all were slightly out of sync, my NPCs and then each of the player characters, and it made the tone of the game strange.
Yeah, I think for sure Rookvale would have benefited from a more robust section on just, like, setting and characters and that kind of thing, and I believe it is the case that the game's creator sort of just created this as a reward for, like, Patreon backers. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, not just for Patreon backers, but because of Patreon. Mm-hmm. And that's why it seems less like what a sort of a quick game they made. And it does show a little bit. So, like, it could be the case if you were GMing it, or not anyone was GMing it, they could decide for themselves, like, what the matriarchy of the place, mm-hmm. I can't remember what the name of the overall country is like, and what the different genders are like. And
Rookvale, right?
Is it called Rookvale?
Yeah, it's called Rookvale.
Well, yeah. The map says the map of the Scourge.
The Scourge being the demons invading.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
All right. I got it.
I did read the whole book twice.
Scourgevale?
Also, none of the monsters were given descriptions, which was fun for the monsters that I had ideas for, but because of the way the monster generation worked, I didn't know which monsters I would use or not use. So, again, I ended up having to improvise a lot of the entire descriptions and, like, mechanics of how the demons worked, and I felt like it led to my early monsters being a lot better than my later monsters, which were kind of dumb.
It felt kind of like a quick role-playing system in that not designed for, like, really long games. It felt like a mix between a role-playing system or a board game that you'd play in one evening, just a really long one. The randomness of when the monsters show up and just lacking concrete descriptions for a lot of things. It's like, oh, here's an interesting idea that gives different gameplay to the game, but they're not going to go into the story of it or anything. It could have more of that, but
I think that was a good comparison. It is kind of somewhere between a role-playing game and a board game.
Yeah. No, when you put it like that, it's a strange marriage between the two that I don't think quite works, unfortunately. I do like it overall, which is the strange thing. I'd probably play it again.
Oh, I had a lot of fun with it.
I think overall I didn't like it, but that's a exciting fusion to me. Like, I think that there are potentially really interesting systems that exist in kind of the nebulous area between board game and role-playing game, and I've only seen a couple systems like that, so it's definitely something I'm going to look out for.
So, the way that the combat works, and I think this probably comes mostly from Anima Prime, I don't know how much of it is new to Rookvale, is that you have these really cute character sheets, and they'll be up on the site sometime after the podcast is released, and they have like three different sections for your dice, and one section is your action pool, one section is your place for your charge dice, and one section is checking for your strike dice. And I don't need to go into full detail for all of that, but basically what it is throughout the combat, you will be taking your turns to try and move dice out of your action pool into your charge pool and your strike pool, because that's what lets you actually do attacks and lets you actually cast spells and that kind of thing. And in that sense, it's also kind of board gamey. But the way that you do that is you do that by... Do they call it achievements? Something like that. I've already forgotten.
Achievements is for when you're finishing a goal.
They're like goals.
Oh, goals. Yeah. Goals. So, like, for instance, you could, say, use one of your skills, and each skill has a different value for it.
Yeah. Are you talking about maneuvers?
Maneuvers.
Perfect.
That's,
you're
I don't know
You're not talking
words.
About goals.
Hello,
maneuvers.
Podcast. Yeah. So, in order to move your dice around, you have to use maneuvers. And in order to do this, you like choose one of your skills, you get some dice equal to that skill level, you get some dice out of your action pool, you roll them all, and you describe what kind of maneuver you're doing. So, like, one of my skills was just that I was mighty. So, like, I could just slam through a wall or something, and that could be my maneuver. And this explicitly, as being a maneuver, wouldn't be able to do any damage to any characters, anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a strange part of the system, because when you're maneuvering, all you're doing really is moving your dice around, and you're describing things that sort of change the setting, but they're mostly fluff.
I really liked how that played. I was uncertain about it, just like in the book, but this is one of those times with role-playing games that it's surprising how well it played. Like, it led to really cinematic combat without having a whole lot of rules, which a lot of systems like Exalted that are intended to give you really cinematic combat achieve that with just like a mountain of rules. But like, we did a lot of fun tactical and character things in the combat. Like, I felt like the characters were more interesting and three-dimensional in the combat than they were in the character scenes, which is really unusual for a role-playing game.
The maneuver system for the combat was really interesting, because in a lot of role-playing games, combat is, I hit the demon with my sword, okay, over and over again until the combat's over. But in this one, you can't hit the demon until you maneuver around the battlefield, like, oh, I go and run over here and hide behind the wall so that he doesn't know where I am, or I throw my pocket sand at him or something.
Yeah.
It's basically requiring the players to think through the combat as if they're telling a story, not just as if they're playing a game. So I think it worked really well.
I liked it in the sense that it did really make the combat a story, and it made the descriptions really cool, and it made you feel like you're moving through the battlefield and all that. But the weird thing about it was how much of it was just not actually tactical and didn't really matter. And I don't know that there's an easy solution for that, but there's a lot of stuff where, like, especially in the last encounter, like, one of the demons could just fly, and they were flying all over the battlefield. But when it got to be my turn to attack, when I had finished doing my various maneuvers, even though all I had was a sword, I could hit the demon. Like, attacking, there's no range rules, there's no rules for things being behind walls or anything like that. And that's cool because it means we're doing a rules light system where I don't have to think too much about, like, maneuvering on a grid or something. But it's weird because what it means is I can hit any demon anytime I want if I have the right dice for it. So all the maneuvering that I've been doing, if this makes any sense the way I'm saying it, is sort of just words, words, words. And it's fun words, and they're words that make the battle sound cool. But no matter how much maneuvering I have been doing to batten down the hatches and hide myself behind a wall or something, it doesn't really make a difference. If it's a demon's turn to attack, the demon can attack me.
Certainly, and there's not really any mechanic for anybody at the table to say, like, no, I don't think that's a good tactic. If your skill is might, you could use might to throw something at the demon, or you could use might to dig a big hole for no reason, and mechanically the effects would actually be the same. And there's no, like, I'm the DM and I think that tactic is stupid, you get minus two dice, which I don't think would actually make the system more fun, but it did certainly make it so that, especially in longer combat encounters, the individual maneuvers did start feeling kind of words, 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 where we could just say whatever and, like, then roll some dice.
This is still, again, ahead of many combat systems wherein you could just say, I attack the thing, I attack the thing, I attack the thing. So at least it is making it say words, words, words. But
which is more interesting.
Which is more interesting. I mean,
even if they are just, like, empty words, at least they're not, I hit the demon with the sword, I hit the demon with the sword. Like, it gets really tedious really quickly.
And the one system in the game that you could maybe use to reward or, I guess, punish maneuvers would have been the goal system, although I think overusing it would have gotten really old really fast, wherein, in addition to being able to roll dice to fight demons and the like, there can be goals set up during the battle that you have to do. So, like, the goal could be save the villagers, the goal could be stop the tower construction, and if you do a thing that the GM thinks makes sense to establish a new goal, the GM can create a new goal right there, and then that's a new thing you can try and roll for and try and achieve and help things out. Whether or not this is something that can easily come up with on the fly or make sense, that's something else again, though.
I must say, related to the goals, as a GM, there are a few things that are more frustrating to me than systems with absolutely no guidance as to what the difficulty curve is. So in the game book, it's like, as the GM, you should be making up goals on the fly all the time. I'm like, okay, I'll do that. But nowhere in it does it tell me what the difference between a difficulty 3 and a difficulty 4 goal might be. So I always just kind of had to guess. And, like, sometimes it felt like where all the dice on the pool were, a difficulty 5 goal was, like, stupidly easy, and I might as well have just given it to the players, or, like, made it a lower thing, or made it higher so that it made more sense. And sometimes I had a couple difficulty, like, 6 or 7, and then in the total party kill encounter that was taken right from the book, it had a difficulty 8 goal that was just, like, an insurmountable barrier. Like, the players just could not get 8 dice together.
With me and Matt and Matt's Pokemon working together, we had a shot at it once where if I rolled perfect, we would have been able to do it. But obviously, I did not roll perfect because I was rolling 10 dice. Or so, 8 dice, I guess, in that case.
Did I run the encounter improperly? Did they not have enough Pokemon? Like,
I think that the players were improperly prepared for the encounter because we didn't, I think capturing more Pokemon would have helped.
I mean, but I think that's a guess. Like, in the book, there was no indication this is an encounter designed to be played once the players have 3 Pokemon. Like, I ran it because this was, like, this is an encounter you can have in this area, and if you guys didn't have enough Pokemon, maybe it was my fault for running it then. Like, I was just given no...
I think it's just a lack of experience with the system. I mean, I think that if we did everything the same again, except that the players handled the combat differently, instead of killing the demons, we befriended them, and then captured the Pokemon and then used those more, I think that we could have beaten that mission, the total party kill mission. I think we would have had a much higher chance of doing it if we had played the game... I think that they intended for the players to capture Pokemon a lot more often,
yeah.
But they definitely didn't make it clear how important it was, but I haven't played the game enough to know if I'm right.
Yeah, no, same. But, like, in most role-playing systems that I think are well-designed that have dice, there will be a chart of...
difficulties.
Difficulty levels, sure. Where a level 1 goal might be something like this, a level 2 goal. That's super useful and should not be omitted in a game with numbers. Like,
I agree. You can figure that out on your own by playing the game a few more times.
But I shouldn't have to. Like,
exactly. Like,
that's one table that would have taken 15 minutes to put together and would have made the game tremendously more playable.
Not a game designer. I don't know how long it would take. I do think that would certainly have helped. One weird thing, though, about the goal system, just from the start, though, in our very first encounter, was we had two goals. One goal was stop the village from being on fire because the village was on fire. The other goal was save the villagers. So we did put out the village. We used some witchery for that. But we actually ended up ending the encounter before we got around to completing the save the villagers goal, technically, although a lot of our maneuvers had been about getting the village out of trouble. And because we'd rolled well enough to kill beyond wolves, what this meant was we had not completed that goal, so even though if we had decided to make the encounter last longer, we probably would have been able to save the villagers. Because we had killed the wolves too early, we had actually had more villagers die than we would have otherwise, which was a weird kind of, like, video game-esque disconnect for me.
It felt really weird to me because I don't understand how you save the villagers without killing the wolves. I thought that was the point. You save the villagers by killing the wolves. Okay. No, those are two separate things. You save the villagers by guiding them through their emotional troubles and then also kill these wolves? It didn't make sense.
That was the first time I had written goals. I felt like I was writing them by the guidelines in the book, but I think that was at least partially my fault, where...
it might have been.
That was...
but...
a set of goals that did lead to a weird resolution of that encounter, and in the book, it says that I could leave that goal open, so rather than saying, you kill all the wolves, but there were a lot of casualties, I could have said, you killed all the wolves, but the village is still in danger, there are more demons on the horizon, or something. And that might have been a better way to resolve that encounter. But I think I made a bad call there.
No, fair enough. That was just something that I remember being strange.
No, it was strange.
It's still strange. It was weird.
Yeah.
Character creation. So, the way they make characters for the system is pretty quick and pretty simple. Again, sort of just to gear you up and get ready for combat. You choose, like, your character's past. You choose...
I think it's gender, past...
trial.
Like, trial, yeah. Something bad that... has happened to you in the past, and
gender,
then...
trial, and then item?
Item. Or gender, past. So, like, your background. I think it's called background.
Okay.
And then your trial, which is, like, a major negative event that happened in your past. And then
changed your characters, just everything.
And then the item you were granted when you were chosen by the queen to hunt monsters. I liked that in this system... all of those things are cards, and you set all the cards out, and when someone picks a card, no one else can play that. I feel like that's actually an uncommon mechanic in role-playing games, but I like how that plays around the table. Like, it makes it so that character creation is a little bit competitive in a way that I think is fun, and also all of the characters are, by design, a little more distinct than they otherwise would be. Like, when you're forming a D&D party, you generally don't want to have two or three fighters if you have four players. So people kind of do this naturally, but people do that because that's, like, the right way to play D&D, not because there's a mechanical reason, like, not because it's built into the system. So I think it's fun that in this system, you pick a class and then that's your class. No one else has that class.
I like the way that each thing was unique to each character. I like the way that it was sort of just pretty simple, easy building blocks. Again, when we call this like a marriage between a role-playing game and a board game, I think this is another way that comes into it. It's not exactly how you might do it in a board game, but it's equally a similar sort of thing where you each get to choose some stuff and that may build your character one set at a time instead of going and like writing a whole piece of prose fiction about your character's past. And you do also, while you're doing this, fill out personalized traits about your character and you choose some skills. But I thought it was a cool assembly line sort of thing.
And the skills and traits were very similar to how they work in Ribbon Drive. To the point that I'm not sure that we need to talk about them too much. It was impressive that the author just kind of ported them over.
It's possible that someone who's listening to this who has not listened to our Ribbon Drive cast, but it's pretty simple. Like you just choose a trait. In this case, you choose a trait. One based off of your past, one based off of your trial, one based off of like how you relate to the other party members.
And your trait's just like any sentence or phrase that you pick.
Yeah.
And it just like describes your character.
Yeah, that describes your character and that sort of helps direct how you roleplay in the future to make it be a character. The skill, I don't think there are any skills in Ribbon Drive, but
the skills work almost exactly the same, except you pick them from a pre-generated list.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is kind of an interesting system in that, like, rather than everyone having a strength score and a dexterity score, one person's character can have dexterity and nobody else at the table thinks about their character's agility at all, which is a little weird, but I think it worked well.
If you're looking for a system where it's fairly lightweight, but it lets you roll something like 10 dice at a time in your hands, this is that system, because it's pretty fun to roll a lot of dice at once, just as a physical thing. I don't know about you guys.
I did want to talk about the tone problems.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think maybe we all have something to say about
this. Oh, boy,
this
is the best part of the podcast.
So, Rookvale opens with something to the effect of Rookvale is a grimdark setting. You need to play it as serious as you possibly can without ever crossing the line into melodrama, and you should establish with your players where the line of melodrama is and how dark is uncomfortably dark and how dark is like the right dark. You're looking for super dark. But Jesus, like a lot of things in the system and in the book are really silly in ways that really undermine any efforts to keep this like a grimdark setting, and not silly in the way that Warhammer 40K is, where you're like, haha, wow, the grimdarkness of space, huh? But they give you a list of sample names of Rookvale, and it's ridiculous. Like, I can't even believe someone would hand me this list of names for any role-playing setting, even a role-playing setting that wasn't explicitly meant to be serious. The list of names includes, like, shorts and Tampa.
Rope. I think was one of them.
Like,
oh, what were the other ones? They were also good.
If I was playing just, like, vanilla D&D and one of my players came to me and was like, I'm going to play a halfling rogue and I want to be called Shorts, I'd be like, no, that's too silly.
What about Rope the Barbarian?
Rope the Barbarian's stupid. That's ridiculous.
No, it's funny. I guess I just have a much higher threshold for this, because names didn't bother me actually one bit. Not at all.
They bothered me a little. They bothered me for this particular setting, but not for every role-playing system that I could conceive of. I'm sure they fit somewhere.
They might fit somewhere, but definitely not here.
Every name fits somewhere. These ones definitely don't fit
the here. Names we ended up with for our characters. My character was Belle. Matt's character was...
I can't remember.
I can't remember. You took the character sheets. They were around here somewhere.
Like...
Whisk?
Visk.
They were Visk.
That's right.
Yeah.
Visk, another name that's kind of silly.
It's not that bad.
It's not Shorts.
It's not Short. It's not Rope.
No.
It's not Tampa.
Belle, it's not Tampa.
Belle, Visk, and Litter is what we had.
Litter.
Litter, also a silly name.
Litter's...
And these, like, I was sitting there vetting people's names, which was not in the rulebook at all. Like, in the rulebook, it's just like, oh, pick your name, and then that's your name. But, like, I was like, no, you can't be Shorts, you can't be Rope.
I was really upset.
Like, this was the second tier up of silly names on the list. The names got dumber than that.
The list of names was actually sillier than anything that I would have come up with if I was trying to be silly. They worked really hard to make that as silly as possible, I think.
Yeah, the thing, actually, that makes it, I think, difficult to go grimdark with this game is less the names, at least on my end, because whatever, a name is a name, but is the fact that as this is sort of a marriage between a role-playing game and a board game, and it is a game where you sort of just go and collect pets, it's difficult for me to not characterize those pets in sort of a funny way, even though they're supposed to be demons. And maybe
a little bit.
That's just how it is for me. Like, no, even if I have captured the dead king, I got nothing that I'm not going to be able to think of, like, oh man, I got a dead king and he's the best. I'm going to feed him every day. I'm going to take him for walks. And, like, obviously that's not how I would roleplay it. But, like, that's just how that's the kind of jokes that would come naturally to my head.
But if Grimdark is on the far right and
Shorts.
What you just said is on the far left, every time the gameplay was somewhere in the middle of that, which was sillier than totally Grimdark, I agree that even just the mechanics didn't lend themselves very well to playing just a super serious setting. I think that I've seen some systems that work pretty well for that. Like, I think that the whole White Wolf, what's their larger brand called? Not Vampire, but
New World of Darkness.
I think the World of Darkness setting is a set of mechanics that works pretty well for, like, a really dark, serious style of role-playing, which is not to say that it's better than all other systems or anything, but it's my impression that the author was shooting for something like that, that was very dark and serious sci-fi fantasy, and the mechanics at play here were just, like, rolling a bunch of dice. It feels kind of silly. The maneuver system and how kind of flimsy words it was lends itself really well to, like, cinematic battles, but not very well to feeling kind of vulnerable and scared, which are the combat mechanics necessary to keep combat feeling really dark.
I think that a lot of that could have been solved if I don't remember reading through the entire book. Was there any examples of play in the book? Like, it just sort of examples. It's like, oh, and then Bob is playing the character Tampa. Or, well, not Tampa, but...
You know, now that you mention that, they go through a example character, but there is not a single example play. This is one of the first role-playing books I've ever read that...
Yeah, I think to get the whole grimdark feeling, like Bram was saying about how it's like, oh, look, I got a dead king. I'm going to, you know, pet it all the time and make sure his hair is so nicely coiffed before battle. But if there was an example of play, like how they want you to describe what it's like to summon a demon in the middle of a battle, then you could come up with it in a couple hours, just something that fits the theme they're trying to go for. But without that, the first thing that players think of is what it's going to be, and that isn't what they want.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to go back to the Dead King phenomena, it is the case in the system that, like, summoning a demon isn't actually effortless, and, like, it's possible that if you're not careful, the demon might escape or might attack you or something like that if you let its hubris go too high.
Yes.
And, you know, so it's certainly the case, I think, especially if the GM were to go really in-depth about all the descriptions and description of summoning a demon and the feeling of being trapped in the crystal in your hand and the danger and all that, you might be able to insert the feeling of the Grimdark setting into this system. But I do agree when Raven was saying that it is not a system that mechanically feels like it lends itself to that by itself. I don't know enough about World of Darkness to say if it does or not, but... Like, one of the reasons that while we might play Fate, we might play GURPS, we might play Savage Worlds on here sometime, I'm not drawn in by them necessarily, is because for a system that isn't designed around a particular feel, sometimes when the GM is trying to make that feel, it doesn't go over as well, as opposed to systems that are designed with mechanics in mind to match their flavor. Mm-hmm. And I think those are always going to work better.
I do agree that the GM or the players could get there on their own. They could get to the feeling. They could take the time and describe everything. But it's not something that I thought about initially when I was playing, and I wasn't really thinking about that. If there had been any kind of an example of play, I probably would have read through it, and it would have been like, all right, so this is how it's going to be, and then I just start thinking through it like that. The players and everybody who's playing can do it, but they shouldn't have to do all of it. I think it would be better if they didn't have to do all of it.
It's kind of unfair to compare this to Rutama, because Rutama is a whole full system with a giant book that has, you know, actually been, you know, put a lot of time in development.
And I think it's probably unfair to both systems to compare.
Well, I mean to say, I think Rutama is a good example of a game that, even though we have played just a little bit, I got a good feeling for what it felt like Rutama wanted to be and what Rutama wanted to feel like. I don't know if you got that as well, but I was already drawn into sort of the traveling feel of it. I felt like I was starting a little journey, even though we only had just a short while to do that in our one shot. Whereas with this, I felt like I was rolling a lot of dice, and that was fun, but it didn't make me feel like I was in a cold, dark world, at least until we were into the cold, dark part of the map where it took our dice every turn, and that was less grimdark and more inconvenient.
Yeah, I think that mechanics do have a texture to them, and probably of the games we've played, Dread is the best example of this, where the structure of the whole game is built around the tower, and the entire table thinking about kind of the precariousness of their situation and weighing whether short-term gains for their character would benefit their character in the long run, or if screwing over the group would also end up screwing them over. Like, these were mechanics that, completely absent from the DM doing anything in particular, made the game feel like a horror game. Dread is a set of mechanics that injects stories told with it with a specific feeling of horror. Whereas, largely, I would speculate, because Rookvale is built off of Anima, which was doing something different, the Rookvale mechanics don't really connect with their intended tone, and I think it might actually be a tremendously better system if it was attached to a setting that connected with the mechanics a little better.
If I had played this game being run by its creator, that is, say, Rookvale, not Anima Prime, a lot of these problems might be solved,
certainly,
because the creator certainly would have the setting in mind, know what the genders meant, or at least have some idea on how to run that and all that kind of thing. I don't think that was put into the book very well, and that's just
exactly
what it is.
You know, like, if I sat down and wrote a homebrew system in 6 months, and 6 months from now we sat down and played my game, even though I've never designed a role playing system from scratch, I think it would be more fun than I had with Rookvale, simply because it's easiest to implement your own ideas. The complaint that it felt like half of the Rookvale book was missing really comes up here, where, as the GM, I had no idea how the creator wanted me to achieve the tone that they stated at the beginning of the book with the mechanics, and it was their job to communicate where that connection was. I don't think that's in the book.
I had fun and wouldn't mind playing it again, but it could be better.
Yeah, I mean, I had something in my head just now, and then it just...
We can wait for it.
We can wait for it. We have all the time in the world.
Yeah.
Raven, I'm locking the door again. It wasn't really locked before, but
now. Oh, man, no, it's psychically locked.
Yeah, it's true. Brain locked.
It's with the mental ward.
Yeah, and I mean...
No, it's where she's going to end up locked is.
Yeah. In the mental ward. No. So, I don't know exactly how long it took this game to be made. It is literally free, so if you want something that's, as far as at least playing it goes, I don't know how for running it, is fairly quick and fairly fun and you don't have to think really hard about, you could do worse. Like, it is actually no money.
I would say, having not ever read it, to check out Anima Prime. I was pretty impressed with the core systems borrowed by Rookvale, and I bet that Anima is a whole lot of fun.
This is I guess, sort of a sideways half review of Anima Prime. I think there's probably other systems in that that we don't even know about, so we haven't touched on them. But the core combat of rolling a million dice and getting to move to the right bowls, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And, like, I did like it. If you think that Rookvale itself is interesting enough, just be prepared to, I guess, probably do a lot of legwork ahead of time to establish what kind of world you want it to be, unless you are the creator and listening to the podcast, in which case you already know what you're doing.
I think if they've been listening to it, they might think that we don't think that.
I hope that the author's not listening. This is a mean things about their book.
Anyways, though.
Camp is going to be so upset.
2 out of 3 would play again. 1 out of 3, at least try Anima Prime if you feel like it. It's also free. It is free, right? It's just a free thing to get.
Anima Prime has a, like a lot of role-playing systems, has a freeware version that is available on their website. I don't think you get all of the like pictures and formatting and stuff.
So there's a free version of Anima Prime out there you can find. Go wild. It's pretty interesting. Wabam. Wabram.
Wabram. Oh, you worked a pun right in a tea last minute.
The credits music. Every challenge along the way, with courage I will face.
I will battle every day to claim my rightful place. Thanks again for choosing Parallel Lives as your favorite podcast during character creation. You can find Raven at absoluteapocalypse.tumblr.com and Matt and myself at Wampastompa and at Wednesday Quest on Twitter, respectively. Our music today was The Pokemon Theme, sung by Jason Page, and Rookvale can be found online at buriedwithoutceremony.com/rookvale. If you want to see pictures and deets from our sessions, head on over to parallelurl.com, and if you want to give us a bonus to our next roll, you can give us a rating or review on iTunes or on Stitcher. We will sing your praises. Pokemon, gotta catch 'em all. It's you and me. I know it's my destiny.
He had a lot of health.
He had like 10 health.
What he didn't have is defense.
Yeah. Turns out when he can't skeleton dodge, nothing.
No, man, I tied him to his chair.
Yeah, when he can't skeleton dodge, nothing. That's exactly right.
That's all I would have put it.
Nothing.
I have a way with words. Thank you.